Welcome to the Rand CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
What's up, everyone? This is Dylan Marmer bringing to you the Rand CRE Show, joined by my co-host, Mike Taravella. How are you doing today, Mike?
You know, just living the dream, making it happen, and super excited to have our guest on for today's show.
It's going to be a powerful show today, all about how you can go out there and be able to unlock your retirement funds. So we're very excited to bring some serious value to all of our listeners here today. Before we get started, I always want to remind you that the Rand CRE Show is hosted by Rand Commercial Real Estate. We're a vertically integrated family of companies that specialize in being able to offer investors with passive investment opportunities, as well as be able to source debt and equity for their future deals. So if you have any questions for us, if you have any needs to go out there and find funding for your next deal when it comes to the debt or the equity side, or if you'd like to invest with us passively, you can always visit randcre.com. So without further ado, Mike, how about you go ahead and introduce our guest? Who do we have on?
Absolutely. Today we have Brian Eastman. He's a principal and senior consultant at Safeguard Advisors and based in Boulder, Colorado. He has been investing in real estate personally and with his self-directed plans for over 15 years, has done everything from subdivision development, flipping properties, rentals, you name it. Brian's done it all. So welcome to the show, Brian. How's it going?
Doing great. Having a fine day. Glad to be here with you guys and share some good info.
All right. Well, we're excited as well. So you want to start off, just give us a high level overview on what it is that you do.
Sure. So Safeguard is a very unique sort of niche provider in the retirement industry, and we create and support what are called self-directed retirement plans. And basically what that means is you're staying in that nice tax sheltered umbrella that we're all used to with Schwab, Fidelity, and you know whatnot, where we accumulate some nice future savings, but you have more flexibility. Instead of being limited to investing in the stock market, it's just different plan configuration and different services that open up the possibility of investing in real estate, you know, the types of partnership you guys put together, private lending, things of that nature. So for people who just want to have a more broad portfolio and more control, we have not only the platform, but also the guidance that you need when you start, you know, getting out of the narrow box of Wall Street and taking management yourself. There's things you need to know to navigate that properly. So that's where we fit in.
Love it. So I want all of our audience and listeners to know that, you know, you may be familiar or you may not be, but either way, I'm sure you're going to learn a lot on today's show. We've talked to a lot of people in the self-directed industry and really vetted out. We want to find the best of the best in terms of someone to work with our investors and for people that we reach out to. We want someone that's not just there as, say, a sales guy there to set you up with an account of some sort. And make a commission, but someone that can really be there as a guide and a resource, and someone that's we truly can consider an expert in the space, and that's certainly what we found with Brian. And he's a book of knowledge, and I'm sure that we're going to go over a lot in today's show, but I'm sure it's only going to be just a quick glimpse into his world of what goes on behind the scenes here. So want to preface with that because our audience would, I'm sure, appreciate just getting to learn a little bit about how you got into this space and what should someone look for when they're vetting a group to help educate them on their own investment strategy.
Sure. Well, you know, my story into this is, you know, like so much in the modern age, kind of, you know, part accident and part good fortune and whatnot. I was actually in software development for a bunch of years. The company I was with got acquired twice in a 1-year period, and I got pushed to the wrong part of the food chain. And fortunately, I saw it well enough in advance. I just said, okay, time to go do something else. And I actually just went straight into some real estate investing. I for several years, made a living flipping homes. It was nice to get out from behind a desk and go out and make deals. And I mean, I even, you know, did some of the work, not always, because I knew that wasn't the most efficient way to do my time. But I sort of liked being the gentleman contractor and whatnot. Did a bunch of flip subdivisions, like you said, in the intro, stuff like that. So really kind of networked into the real estate space and then stumbled into at a seminar, the gentleman who used to own Safeguard, he's in his late 70s now and has since retired. But it was a very novel concept, and it was a mix of that experience in the real estate industry and my background in software. On the software business, I was more on the business development and training, corporate training. We did these huge million line of code, you know, software systems for big retailers. I was working with the CEOs, helping them, you know, learn how to take all this disparate information and get the most value out of it. So that whole concept of taking big complex environments and boiling them down to the essentials of what somebody needs was the skill set. So it's a neat opportunity to take a novel concept and take it out to the marketplace. You know, the internet was new at that time, and doing business over the internet in this kind of way, and been a fun ride. You know, very entrepreneurial, very what I like about it is just being, you know, out there in the front lines, working with investors every day and hearing stories and getting to share the very, you know, specialty expertise that we've built up over the many years that we've done this.
Mm-hmm. I can firsthand say that, Brian, you've been super helpful in working with me through the process, and, you know, always having the answer and making the complex simple is what you do very well. So definitely appreciate it in my experience, and would highly recommend as investors looking, making sure that when they are working with a self-directed person and vendor to make sure that they're not hiding in the weeds details.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different types of services in our industry, and helping people kind of navigate through that. And most people just don't know what they don't know. They hear the word self-directed IRA. They don't know that there's about five different flavors and all kinds of different services. And, you know, you can just set up an account with a trading firm that basically is a paperwork pusher and doesn't give you much in the way of guidance. And, you know, it looks cheap on the front end because it doesn't cost much to set up, but you just get nickel and dimed, and you don't get things done because it's people pushing paper, you know. Whereas we'll talk a little bit about what we do. It's a much more personal service. It's a much more a useful type of vehicle for an investor who's serious about taking control of the money. And then we'll talk about it a little bit. It costs a little more to set up because there's some legal constructs involved, but it's way more usable. It saves a ton of money over the long term, and it's so much more supported just by the nature of how it's provided. Not tooting our own horn, but more just the business model of how we do it. Of course, we take a big focus on that client side of things too, but it's different than just having a processor for sure.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of companies out there, especially the large corporations, are really just targeting these vehicles as a way of being able to get someone's money into a vehicle where they can manage their money and make fees off of their money or really make money off the management side of it. Whereas you're more in a position where you seem to be just guiding folks to get in the best vehicle and giving them control over their finances, right? And letting them make the decisions from there. Is that right?
Yeah, that's really it. I mean, we build a vehicle that puts the client in control of their funds, and then we're there as consultants, but it's not transactional. We'll talk about our structures here in a few moments, but we're not holding funds. We're not processing transactions. We're not creating a commission layer based around those services. We're building a legal construct that puts the clients in control of the funds and then have the necessary, you know, educational support to help them get the most out of that vehicle. So it's a different type of service. It's more consulting than financial services when you get down to it.
Which is good because there's no outside vested interest into getting them one way or another, right? I think that's where people struggle with this, is they either probably jump in too quickly and they get stuck with a product that they probably shouldn't have got into and maybe not the right fit for them. Maybe it's not compliant for them, whatever it might be, or else they get caught in analysis paralysis and there's too many options and they're not sure where to go, right? So they need some direction to look in. So
sure.
Why don't we touch on a few of the products that you see that your firm is most commonly presenting and providing to investors?
Sure. Yeah, now let me kind of walk you through our most common product is what we call a checkbook IRA. Just stick high level, you know, stick to the basics, the framework, but also to help people understand the difference between that and hiring a custodian as a processor. Probably about 70% of the people we work with belong in an IRA-based format. We also have 401k. I'll talk about that a little bit later. We'll pause and circle back around. So, any conversation always starts with fit, but an IRA is a great way to take existing money that you've already saved and get control over it. Whereas just at high level, the 401k is for people who are self-employed and generating that capacity to really feed the front end of the plan with new contributions. 401k is going to give more horsepower there. Key difference. But most people, you know, they're really just looking at taking some or all of their existing savings and having more choices to invest with, and they're moving something that they've already done. You can come from an IRA or a 401k into what's called a checkbook IRA. And the way a checkbook IRA works is it's two layers that are designed to give the client the most amount of flexibility. It starts with an IRA account that's held institutionally by what's called a custodian. We use a specialty firm out of Kentucky called Kingdom Trust, and I like to describe them as E-Trade with different paperwork, you know, or Vanguard or Schwab or whoever you happen to like, you know, because as an IRA, everything's the same. And it can be a traditional IRA, Roth IRA, SEP IRA, whatever. The back end, the reporting and the account administration that they do is the same as anybody else. But instead of being plugged into the stock market, they've got the people in the paper to document the more one-off types of things that happen in what we call non-traditional assets, buying into one of your guys' partnerships as an example, buying a piece of real estate, things like that. So that's what's more broadly called a self-directed IRA. Kingdom's one of about four dozen companies that offer those specialized reporting services. We like them as a real good overall mix of, you know, just reliability and quality of service and reasonable fees and things like that. In theory, you could stop there. A lot of people do. They go to, you know, Kingdom Trust, who we recommend. You go to Equity Trust is a big name, Quest Trust, folks like, you know, mostly they have the word trust in their name or XYZ IRA, whatever. And again, they're that model. They're the processing layer. They can't provide any kind of meaningful guidance by rule. They really are just that processing layer. When you give them information, they process that.
Yep. Very good.
I'm gonna pause for just, I wanted to have a pause there. You guys video okay?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So what we do to create a more nimble vehicle is we take that IRA account, and rather than stop there and have that be the processing layer, we push the IRA to the back end and have it make a single investment into a specially formed legal entity, an LLC in most states, and a handful of states like California, we use a trust. But the idea is basically for the client, we're creating their own private fund. So using the common model, the LLC, the IRA will own the LLC. The LLC is used as the transacting layer. So the LLC buys into the investment. You pay all the transactions of acquisition and maintenance out of your LLC held account. You receive all your income back in your LLC account. You get to be the fund manager. So the IRA owns it. You control it. Kind of like having an IRA, you know, let's say Vanguard invested in a single fund, but you get to be the fund manager. And you can invest in anything that the IRS rules allow for. You're not limited to what's transacted on the plan platform. So that's what we call a checkbook IRA.
Yep. And that's really nice. I think it's having that kind of flexibility. We've worked with a lot of custodians. We still have to work with a lot of custodians because whenever we're setting out distributions, there's a lot of requirements on the custodian side. And there is a couple additional hoops to jump through when making any kind of initial investment. So I love the idea of not having to work with custodians. I definitely am an advocate for it. So why not everyone go with the checkbook IRA?
Most people, you know, don't know. If they do, or they learn about it, I mean, we move a lot of people who started out with a custodian account, and then they learn about what we do and they go, oh, wow, that sounds a lot better. And they migrate and they, what I would say, upgrade. In some cases, you know, just sticking with the custodian can make sense. A smaller dollar, relatively static investment that's going to be, you know, somewhere you just sit on it for 5, 6, 8 years. There's not a lot of interaction. The custodian, you know, can end up being a little simpler, and there may not be as much of a cost benefit to our structure. You start having a lot of transactions, or you start working with more money, a lot of the custodians charge based on the dollar value of the account. It doesn't take a whole lot of volume for our system to become more cost effective, but that's the thing that a lot of people don't know. They see front end price tags, which, you know, a little over $1,000, and go, well, I can go set up an account for $50, or I can go set up this $1,000 vehicle. Well, what they don't realize is with the $1,000 vehicle, you're going to spend $125 a year to maintain things going forward. Right. And with that $50 vehicle, you might be spending $300, $500, $700, even $1,500 a year, each and every year, depending on how big your account is. So we've run a lot of analysis and whatnot and sort of find break-even points. But it's, you know, building a vehicle that does everything on the front end, as opposed to hiring a processing service, can end up being a lot more efficient. But again, it takes a little bit of volume before you're going to see that benefit.
What are the biggest hesitancies that people have when they're working with you? What are the biggest questions that you hear most common that you feel everyone should know the answer to?
Oh gosh, it's all over the map, and it sort of depends on where somebody's coming from. But it's, you know, is this safe, and is my money eligible, or can I combine these various types of monies, things like that. And then, of course, depending on what somebody's doing, there's a lot of detail, and where we really focus our conversations is around the legalities of the types of investments that they're wanting to make. The key principle there being, you know, this is diversification of the retirement money. It's not bringing this money into your personal, you know, sort of financial wickets. you know, you're just deploying this capital. Everything has to be done at arm's length and have to avoid, you know, dealings with close family, things like that. So that's the biggest concern from our perspective, is making sure that people understand that keeping things at arm's length, which is pretty easy as long as you know that you need to, and you ask the right questions and whatnot. But from people coming in, a lot of it's, yeah, is it safe and things like that. And of course, structurally speaking, you know, Kingdom Trust, the IRA account custodian, they're registered and monitored by the Fed, just like, you know, Schwab and TD Ameritrade and everybody else. You're in the mainstream banking system, just a smaller specialty provider, but it's the same regulatory framework. Your funds are FDIC insured while they're being moved. The client establishes a bank account at a bank of their choosing in the name of that LLC that we create. So they're in control of where the money lands. It goes through the custodian, might spend as much as 3 or 4 days there, but then it lands in a bank account that they've chosen. And again, that's a business checking account that's FDIC insured until they start putting it to work. Their big question is, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to talk to you guys, look you guys in the face, and make sure you're going to take good care of their money, which I know you will. but you'll have to prove that to each and every investor that you work with. And I'm sure I've seen some of your diligence background materials. It's that kind of stuff. But as an investor, you always want to look into really where you're putting the money. That's the risk point. The structural piece of having the money in a position to be invested differently is very secure.
Yeah, that structure piece was the hardest part, because I know once you obtain all that freedom, you have to really know the rules. And I know, Brian, I'm sure I asked you all those questions plus some, just to make sure everything was dotting I's and crossing T's to make sure it was a pain. So I'm sure I was guilty of asking the hundreds of questions. But like you said, once you get the structure right and it's that true arm's length transaction, it's just smooth sailing from there and making sure it goes to the right bank account.
Yeah.
It's been interesting to see how much of the funds that we've had from investors have been coming in through self-directed IRAs, or in some cases, the solo 401k accounts. We've had definitely north of 30% or so of our total, you know, investor capital that we've worked with that various high net worth investors have been through there. And it seems like it's only going to be increasing, right? We spoke to some of the guys from CrowdStreet, and they were just talking about how much retirement money is starting to flow into all these private investments. And obviously they're seeing hundreds of sponsors, so they're seeing it in much more depth than we have. And it's incredible to see it. It's almost like with technology and where things are today, more and more people daily are becoming exposed to these private investments, and they're wanting to take control over their financial future. I think people are waking up to the fact that mutual funds oftentimes are not outbeating an index fund, right? And maybe they want to roll it into a self-directed and keep it in an index fund and take it out of the stock market and diversify, whatever it might be, right? I think people are realizing that this is not necessarily rocket science to manage your finances, right? With a disciplined strategy, the everyday person with, you know, a little bit of education behind them can perform very well for themselves and build the relationships they need to get access to investments. So while there is a lot of things, you know, there's a lot in the system that's set up to be there as a protection, I think the amount of information available is like no other time. So I imagine for you, it's an exciting time to be in the space that you are. And I imagine, you know, you've seen it only increase over the last 15 years in terms of the amount of people and the comfort level. How has that changed on your end?
Oh, huge, huge. I mean, when we first started, these structures weren't new. The structures that we put together have been around since the early 1990s, but nobody knew about, I mean, you know, Mitt Romney knew about them, right? You know, people who had seven figures behind their name knew about them, and teams of tax attorneys. But the internet and whatnot, this was brand new. Our first 2-3 years when I first started out, it was convincing people that this was real, you know, and that they weren't sending their money off to my personal Swiss bank account, and that the IRS wasn't going to come after them the very next day. And, you know, we had all the stuff to do that. But I mean, so many conversations were about, oh my gosh, you're kidding me. This is real. We're way beyond that now. That finished up in about, you know, 2010, 2012. But the real shift, and it's something that you keyed in on, is the regulatory changes of 2012 that, you know, got codified in 2015 around crowdfunding and Reg D restrictions really opened the doors to the types of investments that you guys are talking about. And we've just seen a huge groundswell. You know, 10 years ago, people were buying a single family rental house with their self-directed IRA. They were doing private mortgage lending. We still see a good bit of that, but that was you know, 80% of our business in those two asset classes. I would say, you know, investing in private partnerships in real estate, you know, the syndications like you guys do with RAND Partners, is coming up on probably 30 to 40%, maybe even, you know, more. And I foresee that just growing because it's a fantastic asset class. It's so much less work. You're more diversified in your risk exposure. You know, it's consistent return you can rely on. And it's just, what's appealing to people is it's very decoupled from the markets. I would never discourage somebody or encourage somebody to just completely pull out of the markets. There's great value in conventional investing, but it's, you know, market driven, volatile news. The news cycle can have more to do with the value of your holdings than what the companies are actually doing with the shareholder capital, things like that. And, you know, sometimes you can hit a home run. Sometimes you can, you know, strike out three times in a row. With the syndications, it's the complete opposite. You know, it's just much less volatile, a lot more predictable, good, consistent return. And it's decoupled from that same news cycle and everything. So when we talk about diversification, it's not just what you're invested in, but how those investments perform in different economic circumstances. And I think that's a big part of what is driving smart investors to syndications because of that very reason.
Yeah, you hit on a great point with the everything that came out within the Jobs Act. And what's very exciting now is what the SEC is proposing in terms of accredited investors, right? To my understanding, they're going to broaden the amount of people that they're going to reform the definition of accredited investor ultimately to allow for people that have this certain education backgrounds and certain careers to actually now qualify as accredited investors, because they're realizing that it's not just about having the money that makes you qualified to take additional risk on. It's having to know, having the knowledge to know what to do with the money that makes you actually qualified, which I think is very fair. I think we can all agree that it makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure that's going to open up the doors even more for this industry, because a lot of sponsors are 50,000 minimum. I think minimums have came down in the last 5-10 years versus what they were at one point. And they'll probably continue to go down over time as technology makes it a little bit easier to handle distributions and things like that. But between the minimums coming down a bit, minimums probably going to continue to come down. And then seeing, you know, the amount of people that qualify as a credit investor, I think we're going to see even more of an influx.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And it all makes sense. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people I talk with who are younger and very entrepreneurial and very, very smart, but they haven't amassed capital yet. You know, they've been paying off student debt. They've been, you know, buying their first home, and savings has been a little bit less of a priority. You know, they have some, obviously, if they're, you know, doing something good and professional that pays a nice salary. But, you know, it's not just those guys who, you know, been around for 30 years accumulating, that are able to look at this kind of stuff. And by contrast, there are plenty of people who have a nice big chunk of savings and really, you know, maybe shouldn't be managing. I hate to say it, but, you know, just having the money doesn't make you smart, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you're acting smartly.
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to hit home is with the multifamily syndication and a deal, say a deal comes to sponsors, you're made aware of it. When should an investor call you if they don't have a self-directed account?
Great question. It's going to take about 3 to 4 weeks in most circumstances to get somebody, you know, have the structure built, get the money moved, have funds under their control where they can fund an investment transaction. It can vary a little bit. Sometimes there's a few things in certain circumstances we can do to expedite a little bit, but in many cases we can. And it really hinges more on where that money is today than anything we're doing. It's the process of getting money moved from a prior retirement plan into the new IRA is the big piece of the whole equation. So it's typically about 3 to 4 weeks, and that, you know, creates a little bit of a conundrum. I know we've gone through a couple of your guys' fundraising cycles, and, you know, by the time you've identified a property, done the diligence work you need to do to produce the documentation, the offering prospectus and whatnot, you got a pretty narrow window. To go out and attract those investors. So sometimes it may be a miss. We can do it in many cases. If somebody's, you know, seeing it, ready to make a decision and acts pretty quickly, there's a high likelihood that from your guys' start point to when you need to fund, we can get somebody done. I might recommend to folks, hey, get comfortable with the concept of working with a particular provider like you guys and say, yes, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to go ahead and set my vehicle up and stay on the mailing list. And then once I'm ready to go, then I'll really look for the opportunity that I see that, that looks. And you, I mean, you guys push out how many projects a quarter, right? You know, there's always another deal. So that rush to that, hey, I just learned about this and I'm going to try and get everything done in the next 3 weeks isn't necessary. You know, get it set up. And one of the things you can do is you can set up the program and everything in place. I like to say when we build a structure, we're laying down some train track and running a carload of money down that track. Yeah. Well, in the future, the track's already there and you just got to run another car down it. And that goes a lot faster, maybe a couple weeks.
It's a good point you bring up, right? Because sometimes it feels like the deal that's in front of you is going to be the best deal there ever is. And it might be, but oftentimes there's going to be another one, right? So I think it's important to, just be patient, but also be decisive. If you're thinking, well, I'm going to see if a particular deal is going to be good enough for me to transfer my funds and set that whole thing up, then I don't think you're looking at it the right way. I think you want to look at how much of my portfolio do I want to invest into private real estate offerings and then structure yourself accordingly. Because reality is you don't know which deal is going to be the best, which one's going to be the worst, right? A lot of the performance is going to depend on how the deal actually starts performing when you take over, right? You know, we typically have deals that can heavily overperform and some that are going to underperform. And I think, you know, you really want to just know that you're committed to investing and know how much you want to allocate to each particular deal.
Yeah, the people I see having the most success, especially looking, you know, at private placements like what you guys are doing, is say, I've evaluated this. I know I'm, you know, again, what portion of my portfolio, I'm going to take a third of my money and put it into these kind of investments. So they get the vehicle built and maybe they move a third, maybe they move a little bit less depending on, you know, what time frame they think they're going to deploy, how many deals they're going to look into, how, you know, you don't want to have money sitting around doing nothing for long periods of time, but they get the structure in place so that then they actually have the time after an introductory meeting to really do their homework and really decide, do I like this particular deal? Because once the vehicle's in place and funded, making that decision to execute, it's the same day thing. You know, so being ready to go out and act in advance just gives an investor so much more flexibility to really spend the time doing the diligence that they need to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think too, just hitting home of building the foundation, you don't hear about multifamily the next day you're investing $50,000+. Similar to Brian's vehicle of retirement, you got to build the foundation, understand the concepts and making sure you feel comfortable with this vehicle going forward. Because if you don't, you're more likely to wreck. You're more likely to not be calm and thinking straight when investing in these deals. So making sure you just build the foundation, feel comfortable with it, talk to Brian, talk to sponsors like us to make sure that you feel comfortable with this vehicle going forward.
And let's just talk about when you're looking at private investments, the question that comes up oftentimes is, well, can I go buy my own deal with my self-directed IRA, right? So what does that look like if someone's...
Sure. Yeah, that's what we did for a bunch of years. And, you know, until 2015, we'd have the occasional investor back in the old days who, you know, knew through his golf club some guys who were putting together a syndication. But it was usually, you know, six or eight guys with really big chunks of money each, not, you know, 40 investors pooling together to get $3 million like, you know, we do nowadays. So we've seen that in the past. But no, in the past, it's been people, you know, maybe not buying a, you know, 200 unit apartment complex, which is a different type of animal than a single family, but mm-hmm. we've had a lot of folks investing in single family, 1 to 4 unit, even some smaller apartments if they've got enough capital, or maybe forming their own very small partnerships, 2 or 3 investors coming together to make an investment. The plans are entirely capable of doing that, and if that's somebody's focus, the plans can do it. I like, you know, being a very passive partner in somebody else's deal. How much work do I want to spend managing my retirement money? I don't want to be collecting rent checks and calling plumbers and stuff like that. I want to be looking at my statement.
Right. You can't spend the cash if you're actively managing it. It's all going to go right back into the account.
Exactly. The rules are the same regardless of what you're investing in. It's the IRA that owns the asset. All expenses are paid out of the IRA. All income is received into the IRA. And of course, the benefit is that income is tax sheltered back into the IRA, just like if you were getting dividends off of stocks or something like that.
Yep. And one thing that we like about the retirement money is because it oftentimes is, you can have a longer term outlook. It's a little bit easier to have a longer term outlook with retirement funds because you're able to invest into something that is going to compound and build your nest egg versus invest in something and kind of be hungry to pull your cash out or realize your capital gains at that point and have the cash to work with, because you know those account, the money's already in your account. You're going to pay taxes or penalty if you take it out of the account. And if you've already committed to a retirement account, most likely you plan on keeping it there until 59 and a half, the, you know, whatever the retirement age is based on the account at the time. But you know, it allows you to really think long term. And we're strong believers that the one area that multifamily trumps almost anything else out there is in the long term, right? It's not investing for 3 to 5 years, but it's investing for 30 to 40 years. And if you're able to truly have your funds out there in deals that are going to be doing that, and we're looking at various ways of being able to do that with our investment partners, being able to have money sit out there and stay out there for 30, 40 years plus, the amount of appreciation that you can see is just, it's amazing, right? And I don't think there's many assets we can say that we would really bet on being here 30 years from now.
Sure. That's a metaphor I use all the time. I mean, there are other types of investments that can produce a more instant return than, say, multifamily real estate. There's things, you know, you can be that guy who buys Amazon in 1999, right? Well, you know, for every one of those, there's the three strikeouts too. You could also buy WorldCom, you know, or be heavily into Netscape, right? So, you know, there's the potential for those home runs in other asset classes, but the potential is for strikeouts. Whereas with multifamily, it's like hitting a double every time you come up to the plate.
That's right.
And you put a lot of runs on the board if you keep doing that.
Yep. That's a great analogy, right? Even retail right now, right? There's a lot of retail opportunities. The yields are very, very strong there. Stronger than they're going to be in multifamily in the first 2 years. Chances are you're going to make better cash flow in retail as long as your tenant is still in place at that point, right? But there's, of course, risk involved with that. And I think appreciation potential is a little bit less. There's less investor demand across the board. But multifamily, while the yield in place can still be good, the appreciation potential is one of the strong suits, right? So you always want to play to that, and something that we really try to emphasize as folks that have the long-term outlook.
Great. Well, we talked a little bit about the IRA. You guys want to talk about the 401k a little bit?
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, again, the IRA is something that a lot of people can take advantage of. Most anybody can have an IRA, and you can, you know, you can roll in an old 401k. You could roll in an inherited IRA or a Roth IRA. Sometimes we can't mix different flavors of money. Sometimes we can, you know, some of the details we'll talk to folks about, you know, that's all what in the tax code is able to be consolidated into the same reporting regime. But a lot of flexibility there. The solo 401k is the other primary program we offer. And it's the same as a self-directed vehicle. You have full control over the funds. You can invest in anything the IRS rules allow for, which, by the way, is anything other than collectibles. So real estate certainly falls under that category. But as a retirement plan, it's just so much cooler. And the deal with the solo 401k is it's got all the horsepower and high contribution limits of a big company 401k plan, but it's designed for an owner-only business. And so if you're not managing anybody else's retirement savings with the 401k, you fall under a much more simplified administrative regime and become super easy to manage this type of 401k, make very generous contributions into the plan, as well as having that investment flexibility. So for people who are self-employed and don't have any full-time employees, and that's our real estate agents, our independent sales consultants, we've got a lot of, you know, attorneys and CPAs and whatnot who just have their one-man shop. Folks like that who are self-employed, I really like the 401k because it's just, it's an overall more powerful vehicle beyond just the investing flexibility. With the 401k, you can contribute as much as $63,500 per year and take a tax break for doing that. That's the new numbers for 2020. Now, you got to make a lot of money in order to be able to do that. But for somebody who's making 100 or 150 grand, they can still easily put in $30,000 to $40,000 into their retirement savings, as opposed to in an IRA, you're capped at about seven. So real powerful tool. It takes about the same amount of time, 3 to 4 weeks. Has some other advantages. It doesn't require the third party custodian. The way the 401k is built, the plan itself is a trust. and our client, the self-employed business person, can just be the trustee and have control over that. And they just take our legal documents and go open a bank account. It's basically a trust account that they're opening. So same idea, if there's this legal entity that the client has control of, but we don't need that third party layer on the back end. Still takes roughly the same 3 to 4 weeks. Again, it's moving the money from the other plan. That's the big variable in getting that done. But it's a real neat program for those people who qualify by being self-employed.
And that doesn't need to be full-time self-employed, does it?
No, you can be both self-employed and gainfully employed. The requirement is that you have a for-profit activity that's generating earned income. So a lot of people call me up and say, oh, I own 3 rental properties. Does that make me self-employed? No, that makes you an investor. You're receiving passive investment income. But yeah, I've got lots of clients who, you know, maybe have their regular day job with the W-2, but they're a real estate agent on the weekend. And maybe they only sell 2-3 houses a year to friends and family, but that $5,000 or $6,000 or $8,000 worth of commission income is self-employment income. Yep. That's a business, and that business can sponsor the 401k. Now, they're not going to take as much advantage of the contributions, although they might, you know, if you're, again, take that person's example, somebody's on the side doing some consulting or selling real estate, whatever, making 20, 30 grand. If their day job is putting a roof over their head and food on their table, and they're looking at this secondary job as just a way to push themselves forward with their future, well, they can very aggressively put as much of that as possible into the plan, take the tax break for doing so, so they're not getting penalized for being entrepreneurial and having extra income, and feed that tax sheltered pile on the front end. So lots of advantages, even for somebody at a nominal level of income.
I know Mike's CPA buzzer is going ring loud over here.
I was saying all the earned income versus passive income, just having flashbacks to my tax reg exams and all that good stuff. So
I don't see any visible scars. You must have come through okay.
Yeah, and that's Dylan called me over, so it helps.
It's brought me to the good side. It's all internal. It's good
to go. A lot of flashbacks.
There you go.
All right. Well, all great stuff here. We always like to leave our listeners with an expert tip before we wrap up. What would be the best piece of advice that you can offer to someone that has retirement funds and isn't quite sure what direction to go?
Research. You know, you don't want to get tied up in the paralysis of analysis. That doesn't, you know, suit the goal. But just taking your time, doing a little reading. I encourage not reading too much on the internet, because I'll be honest, there is a ton of garbage. There's a lot of bad information. There's a lot of people who don't know what they're talking about, but just a little bit, enough to get the lay of the land. Talk to a handful of providers, you know, like anything else. If you're going to get your kitchen remodeled, you're not going to talk to one contractor. You're going to talk to 2 or 3. Well, when you're talking about your retirement savings, talk to a couple people, but always take a step back. Don't get caught up in sales pitches. Listen, learn, ask questions, and then digest. And when you can see that somebody has your own interests in mind and not just whatever's motivating them to sell what they sell, you know you're in a good spot. And there's plenty of people out there. We like to say that that's our approach as a real, you know, stock and trade to how we operate our business, is put the client out there first in their goals, because that's ultimately, I mean, the only way that our business works. So obviously we want to do it that way, not only because it's the right way, because it's the way the business works too, right? But you see that when you're talking to folks, when, you know, you're talking to investment providers like yourself, people who are transparent and all that. So just do your research, find those good mentors who can move you forward, and then you can operate with a lot more confidence.
Awesome. And what's the best way for our audience to reach you? I know we have a discount as well available to the audience, yep. Right?
Yep. Simplest way, we have a special little landing page for RAND Partners. So our website is IRA123.com. Again, we're Safeguard Advisors, IRA123.com. And if you go to that IRA123.com/RAND Partners, all one word, RAND Partners, you go to a special page. We'll know you came through the folks at RAND. We'll know that you're eligible for the $200 discount off our services that we provide, thanks to the marketing efforts that these guys are putting into it, saving us some expense. We're happy to pass that on as savings to the end client. So that's the best way.
And just also, this isn't, you know, any kind of sales pitch on our end, right? We're not making money off having Brian on the show or adding anybody through that. It's something, you know, we provide the service just because we believe in the guidance that they provide. We have a lot of our investors that we we truly, you know, make our money off of our investments, right? And our goal is to help just provide the investors with the best possible experience. That's why we've linked up with the team here. So certainly appreciate you joining us here on the show today. Definitely learned a whole lot. And there you have it, another edition of the Rand CRE Show. We appreciate all the listeners that joined us today. If you have any questions or things you'd like to learn more on, you can shoot us an email at info@randcre.com. Make sure to leave us a review, rating, and subscribe, and we will see you again next week.